Why?
Bitsa is for freedom, I said before I thought. I'm tied here until the Sangre Duello is done. It's the only way I can protect the people I love. Your little witches, your godchildren. Children who would be killed or taken and turned by Titus Flavius Vespianus, emperor of the Mithrans and renowned hater of homosexuals, Jews, people of color, and witches. Well, that's great to know. Yeah, so thank you for that insight. A retreat is a great idea. After I spill some blood and kill some people. But for now, I'll go spar with Eli and find my center. My Zen moment. If I sounded a little sarcastic, really, who could blame me? At midnight, I was standing under an icy shower, trying to let the cold water beat the bruises out of my muscles. Fighting while in Zen meditation was painful. Not letting time slip wasn't as hard as I expected, but it did require total concentration. Concentration that left instinctive fighting moves all to muscle memory and beast. In some ways, that was better than my usual sparring methods. In other ways, it was not up to my usual speed and skill level. I had jammed knuckles and purple bruises along my rib cage. My knee was wobbly. I needed to shift to beast and heal, but there wasn't time. Time, ha ha. If I got the chance to shift, I'd take it. But it didn't look likely. Meantime, it was Gatorade, hot tea, ice packs, and the cold water of a bruise-fighting shower. I heard banging on my door and knew the boys wouldn't bother me unless it was an emergency. I threw on a robe and opened it to see the kid standing there. He said, "We got a problem. The Stevens family at the B&B, the one Des Citron drank down, they were the blood servants of Lori Caruso." I frowned at him, trying to put that together with logic and sense. "The clan didn't end up there by accident, or just because they owned some lemon trees," he said. "I'm betting they were looking for the bottle of blood the Carusos left behind."
"The bottle Leo's had for long enough to get it reverse-engineered," I breathed.
"How many other blood servants did the Carusos leave?"
"One family in Marigny, the Chiswells. Husband and wife and two kids. House is near the corner of Frenchman Street and Dauphine. I've sent the GPS to ourselves."
I pushed the door closed and dressed fast in my red leathers, with enough weapons to fight off a platoon of vamps. I opened my door to see Eli racing down the stairs, followed him into the street and into the SUV. He handed me a comm set and I put it on, fastening my silver-plated titanium gorget around my neck. "Intel on the place? Backup?"
"Nothing."
He roared the vehicle the wrong way down the street.
"The tequila boys are off doing Leo's initial security work. No answer on Iotis's or Rick's cell. We could twiddle our thumbs and wait."
"No."
"Then we're on our own."
I sent a text and got an immediate reply.
"No, we aren't. We have Jody from NOPD and SWAT."
"Hoo-ah." It had been a while since Eli had used the old army term meaning good and let's do this, and a dozen other things. I figured it was a good omen. Eli slowed and I took video of the place. The Chiswells' home was a brick Creole townhouse with arched windows at ground level. Rectangular windows on the second floor, and arched windows on the third. Non-functional shutters were painted a deep emerald green, and the front door was painted a paler shade of the same color. Iron balconies were on both upper floors, and an iron gate enclosed the front porch. The roof was steeply pitched, with side gables and multiple dormers. Lots of plants were out front and on every balcony. A wall surrounded a tropical garden in back, though I didn't smell lemons. I did smell blood, not much, but fresh. My cell rang. I accepted the call. "Jody, you sure about this? I smell blood. We don't have time to negotiate. We need to do this now."
"What do you mean you smell?"
"Oh, right," she grumbled. "ETA's 4. Smells not enough to be considered exigent circumstances or threat to public safety.
Pull down to Fiend, park and stay put. We're waiting on a paper. She meant a warrant to enter the house, and that might take a long time.
Right. I ended the call.
Eli pulled over into a parking spot, and we got out.
4 minutes is enough time for a recon. Your nose and my infrared and low light, and we'll know where everyone is, he said.
I pulled on Beast's night vision, and the world turned silver-gray tinted with greens and charcoal.
Windows are closed, drapes closed. Let's do a walk-by. Let me see if I can pinpoint the blood.
Immediately, I wrapped one arm around Eli's waist, as if we were out for a stroll.
Eli tapped his mic as we came abreast of the front door.
Cameras on front porch.
I'm in the system, Alex said. They came in the front, fast and violent. 4 vamps and 3 humans. System went offline, but again, they didn't wipe the history.
The blood I smell is at the front of the house, I said, as we rounded the corner and slipped down the narrow easeway between the Chiswells and the house next door. From above us, I heard a scream, full of terror. A child's voice. I remembered the bodies at the bed and breakfast. I stopped.
Eli stopped, his eyes scanning everywhere.
The scream came again, terrified, in pain.
3rd floor, I said, following the sound up.
Back of the house.
Over the fence and back.
Copy that, I said, and tapped my mic.
Call Jody. Tell her we have vamps in the house and children in distress on the 3rd floor. We're considering that, exigent circumstances. Going over the wall and in at the back. Tell her to hit the house at the front, ASAP.
Okay.
The mic went silent.
Then he said, Jody is pissed, but they're parked 3 houses down on Frenchman. They'll enter in 2.
Eli checked his watch.
Your Beast has senses I don't. You take point.
Pulling on Beast's strength, I raced to the fence and leaped. I caught myself with Beast's grace and peeked over the top before I slipped over, into the leaves of an elephant ear plant. I managed to break several of the huge leaves. Eli landed beside me and broke some more.
There were 4 cars in the small lot.
Eli said, dried mud and grass on the bumper, centipede just like the Stevens place. He moved toward the back door and a security light came on. We ducked back into the foliage just as the door opened. A vamp stuck his head out, spotted a cat on a windshield, cursed and shut the door. We didn't hear a lock turn, but I did smell a lot of blood.
Kits, Beast growled.
We're going in now, I said into the mic. To Eli, I added, stay behind me. I heal better than you do.
Eli said nothing, but he raced up the stairs and turned the knob. The door opened.
I rushed in and stopped, my back to the wall.
Into his mic, Eli muttered. Back door was unlocked. A child is screaming. Repeat, we have breached the back. Wall directly ahead, stairs to the right.
The entry was a well-lighted mud room. The vamp who had stuck his head outside was close. I could smell him. We needed him to be quiet. We needed him out of action. We also needed him alive to question.
I pointed to my eyes and then at the doorway to the left, telling Eli I was taking a look. I drew a 14-inch vamp killer and advanced on the opening. 3 feet from me, the vamp walked around the corner. His eyes met mine, bled black, his fangs snapped down. He vamped out. He started to shout. I raised the vamp killer and shoved straight forward, my feet automatically moving into La Destreza. The point of the blade entered his throat and cut through. Blood shot over me. The vamp dropped, the blade hanging in the spinal process in back, dragging my hand down. I waggled the blade and pulled it loose, stuck an ash stake into his belly. But I didn't take his head. If he survived, he might give us intel.
Eli pointed up the narrow stairs, probably servant stairs way back when. He raced up, taking point. Stupid man. I followed. We were on the 2nd floor landing, staring up the stairs to the 3rd floor when I heard a squeak on the front porch. I ran faster, passing Eli. At the top of the stairs, I followed the scent of blood and pointed to a room with the door open. Light spilled into the hallway.
We raced inside. On the floor just inside the room was an adult male, his throat cut, the blood already stopped. Three people sat on the bed staring at him, silent, horrified. The back window was open. I raced to it and looked out. The front door blew in with a crash.
NOPD, freeze, put down your weapons.
I caught a glimpse of a body clearing the back fence in a single bound. Vamp. I dove out the window.
Jane!
Eli shouted. I dropped and landed on a car, caving in the roof but breaking my fall. I took off after the vamp, over the wall. I was halfway down the street when I heard a car start back at the house. It bashed through the gate and pulled away at speed. In the other direction, the running vamp was gone. Crap. Crap, 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 damn it! Crap. That wasn't nearly strong enough. I had to go back inside and deal with a dead father. A traumatized family. I really needed to learn how to cuss properly. I went in through the back door, noted that the vamp I'd staked was gone, relinquished my weapon to the SWAT OIC, and went upstairs. The woman was holding her children and weeping. The children were wailing. Jody was trying to calm them. SWAT officers were everywhere. I stood in the corner and listened until Jody managed to calm the woman enough to ask questions. Only one answer was important to me.
They kept asking us for the bottle, but Lori left it for Leo Pelissier in a place where his people would find it.
Why? I asked, wondering if she'd give me confirmation about the contents of the letter Leo had received. Trying to cover their bases?
No.
The woman looked up. Despite the blood on her face and the panicked children in her arms, she had dignity and poise that made me embarrassed for what I'd just said.
Lori hoped Leo would figure it out and then rescue them. They didn't change sides willingly. The Emperor has held her daughter prisoner for decades. She's on that damned boat in the Gulf.
She smelled of the truth. Beast thought at me.
Kits are afraid. Jane should change to Beast, so Beast can comfort them.
Not this time. Beast's killing claws and teeth would frighten them.
Beast has big killing teeth, she agreed.
I turned and went down the stairs, outside, and away from the fear and horror and the stench of blood and death. Texted Alex what had happened. We had lost our only lead into the Lemon Clan. We had been home less than an hour when my cell sang out with the ringtone Alex had programmed for Leo, Night of the Vampire, by Rocky Erickson. I turned off the shower water, wrapped in a bath sheet that covered me from neck to knees, as if Leo would see me over the cell, which had never been set up with FaceTime just because of moments like this, and answered the call on the line without slipping in blood. It seemed appropriate. I said, How may the Enforcer and the Mistress of Clan Yellow Rock assist the Master of the City?
Pack your bag, Leo ordered. You and the Youngers are needed at the house on Spitfire Island. All has been done that can be done without you. It is time to finalize security measures.
The call ended. I heard a cell ring upstairs, Leo calling the boys. He left little to chance these days. I set the cell aside, face down, and twisted my hair, letting the rinse water drain down the shower. I dressed in jeans and layers, a warm silk knit tee, a tunic sweater, and a short denim jacket, wool socks, a pair of iridescent green snakeskin Lucchese boots. It was warm for winter, but it was still winter. I got out my larger go bag and a pack of plastic zip bags. I tossed in a gallon bag of toiletries, a quart bag full of makeup, mostly different kinds of red lipstick, but mascara and other stuff too. I packed a gallon bag of silver steaks, another gallon bag of Ashwood steaks, one pair of dancing shoes, my most comfy combat boots, a hanging bag of dress clothes, and the red and white leathers. Since I didn't know the sleeping arrangements, I rolled up two pairs of sweats and put them in a plastic bag with undies and socks, t-shirts, an extra pair of jeans, flops. I stood at the front of the bed and studied the bag. It was nearly full. I had come to New Orleans with less than this. From the top of the closet, I pulled all the magical trinkets and magical weapons and stuffed them into the bag, including the glob and the Labraluk, the gold laurel leaf crown that had probably helped me become the Dark Queen. I added the robe that hung on the back of my bathroom door. I almost never used it, but the sleeping arrangement sounded like summer camp. I added my pillow. I had become addicted to high-quality pillows, mattresses, and linens. My life was out of control. The go bag was too full of magic and undies for weapons, so I started a pile to the side. When I had stripped my room of everything that went bang, I sat on the go bag and got it zipped shut, but it was a near thing. I nearly stabbed myself with the stakes in a place that was totally inappropriate for traditional staking. I was still sitting on the bag when Eli's scent swept under the door and he knocked. Come in. He opened the door. Orders from Leo. I got them too. Ruined the end of a perfectly good shower. Eli studied the bag under my backside. You got weapons in that? I could have told him about the magical stuff and the stakes, but when Eli asked that question, he meant things that go bang. No. Ammo? No. Fighting leathers. I narrowed my eyes at him. In the hanging bag. He frowned hard. Do not tell me you packed girly stuff in that. I did. I totally did, and I'm not ashamed. Much. I let the teasing drift away. Something I need to say. You are my brother, my second. You are the one I depend on most when my life is on the line. Eli's eyes didn't move from me, but I knew he had spotted the printed papers on my bedside table. You've been studying the Vampira Carta and the Sangra Duello. Not as much as I should have. But there's this thing called La Danza de los Maestros de Sangre. Dance of the Blood Masters. A grin split Eli's face. Not a happy grin. A bloodthirsty grin. The grin of a man who had just seen a move on the vamp chessboard that he had missed until now. Babe. His grin went wider. Leo's a sneaky bastard. He assures me he was conceived on the legal side of the sheets. That was an important thing back then, but yeah, loopholes are a good thing. And Leo was thinking ahead, way ahead. He couldn't bloodbind you, and you could use witch amulets like a pro. So he promoted you. I gave a minuscule nod. And because he promoted you to bloodmaster of your own clan and to Dark Queen status, you can claim the dance. La Danza de la Maestros de Sangre was a specific way of fighting between bloodmasters. It was magic and weapons and no-holds-barred fighting, claws and teeth, guns and blades, silver stakes, like mixed martial arts and sword fighting and magic all at once, all together. I nodded. But you still packed like a girl. I did. Makeup and a scrap of lace formal and everything. So he won't expect La Danza de los Maestros de Sangre from me. Eli's face went stiff and unyielding. You'll mess with time in La Danza. I nodded. You'll get a headache. Stomach ache. That just means I'll have to kill him and get back in time fast. Eli's scowl went deeper, drawn down the lines on his mouth. I had won. And we now had four secret weapons in the Sangre Duello. Me in half form, me as Clan Yellow Rock Bloodmaster, me as Dark Queen, and La Danza. Eli, I said softly, having the Sangre Duello on an island no one knows about means that any vamps who want to chase us down and interfere will have a harder time. And Uncle Sam's ICE and other enforcement agencies will also have a harder time. Win-win.
Still doesn't outweigh the dangers of you time-walking.
He walked away. He had a point. A moment later, he reappeared in my doorway with his weapons go bag that was already half full.
Don't forget extra ammo for the Benelli.
Chapter 14 Then you date her. The Gulf of Mexico raced beneath us, black water and white caps, and the occasional boat lights below, stars and a clouded moon above. Wind and prop noise were muffled through the earphones as Grey Gua's Vietnam-era Bell Huey blasted through the night, the pilot making excellent time. Hate flying, Beast thought at me. Hate helicopters, hate bird wings. We'll bite Leo for making Beast go on helicopter. Yeah, just give me a warning. I want to enjoy that. We'll tell Jane, but we'll bite Leo. Hate earthquake. I thought about that one and realized she was referring to the intense vibration of the helo. It was pretty awful. Okay by me, but wait until after the Sangre Duelo. I need Leo alive, or undead, whatever. Beast is best ambush hunter, best ambush fighter. Beast is best at everything. Why does Jane want Leo alive? To mate. No? Leo is like a big cat on the African plains, I thought, as the helo rumbled into my veins and nerves, making my body quiver. He has smarts and claws and big teeth. He's a good fighter. A really good leader. He's a good ambush hunter. We need him. Like male African lion in pride. Big cat to fight off other cats. Big cat to keep kids alive. Yes. Ambush hunter. Leo caught Jane and drank from her. Leo won. Leo beat Jane. The memory of Leo trying to bind me slammed through me. I gripped the safety handle by my head. My mouth went dry. Yes. Leo is good ambush hunter. Leo beat Jane. Beast beat Leo. Leo will keep kits of Assad and Nantali alive. I had forgotten about that. About the kits. Leo and I will. Leo and we will keep kits alive. Many more than 5 fights. We will kill many more than 5 vampires and their humans to save kits, and Beast will drink the blood of her enemies. 5 was as high as Beast could count. Beast, no drinking blood. Beast didn't reply. Beast, no drinking blood, vampire or human. The cat padded away from me, showing me her back, a sign of insult. Dang cat. The helo shuddered hard and banked. Alex, sitting beside me, gagged. The kid looked green and sweaty in the dull lights. I handed him one of the specially made puke bags. He took it with shaken fingers. Spitfire Island was a spit of land with a house that didn't seem to be on any map. It was hidden behind and to the west of Last Island on the Barrier Islands, and it was a lot bigger than I expected, for a name that had spit and fire in it. I'd been expecting an island small enough to spit across, or one small enough to raise with a single campfire. Instead, in the landing lights of the helo, I saw low-growing, wind-twisted trees, sawgrass waving in the rotor wash, and palmetto palms. Birds flew into the night in fear, or guarded nests beneath the trees. What looked like an alligator, usually a freshwater critter, slid into the salty water of the Gulf of Mexico, and I saw the house. Holy crap. The house. I had envisioned a cottage with 4 bedrooms. I saw a green-painted 3-story house perched on dozens of massive poles, driven into the sandy land, with a staircase that rose 12 or 15 feet from sand to a front porch. There were working metal shutters painted dark green, lashed back to reveal white-painted windows that were open to the night air, with light blasting into the night. The house, mansion, had a simple hip roof atop the 3rd floor with some kind of metal grating over it that was tied into the ground with long metal rods. Solar panels were built into the mesh, and I wondered if it would power all the lights glaring into the night. There was no grass on the grounds, but the sand was pristine and sparkled in the landing lights of Leo's helicopter. Low trees caught the bobbling landing lights, twisted scrub and sword plants, which seemed appropriate. And there were people everywhere. three with flashes directing the helo to the sandy landing zone, marked out by shells in lines. No independent landing lights, no protection against the erratic winds. The helo taking the buffeting back and forth as it descended. The touchdown was jarring, and Alex fell out onto the sand, throwing up everything in his stomach, which was mostly pizza and garlic and cheese. I did better than expected, especially considering Beast's catty annoyance. I might get seasick, but I did okay on the sashaying winds for the short flight. My stomach warned it would not be so sanguine on a longer flight. I stepped onto the sand, Eli beside me. We helped Alex to his feet, and I slung the heavy go-bags over his shoulder as we raced to the men and women waiting at the edge of the flashlights that illuminated everything in bright flickers of still life. I recognized none of the construction types who had stopped work to oversee our landing, some pointing. Some had beer bellies and were wearing boots and dirty layers. One grizzled woman stood scratching her stomach, a hard hat in her other hand. One guy looked like he'd stepped off a magazine cover, tall, dark, and handsome, with a carefully groomed scruff, a mustache, and jeans that rode low on his hips. I could see him in a tweed jacket teaching on a university campus. Four looked like bodybuilders, all muscles and shape and form. One of them was a woman, and she had shoulders to die for, like a power lifter, muscles you could still use. Her hair was pulled back in a tail. Derek and some of his guys stood between the landing site and the house. Beast took over for a moment, and before I could stop her, she tossed my go-bag at Derek. He caught it by instinct. Irritation flashed through his eyes. Beast chuffed. I could see the gold of my our eyes reflected in Derek's. I had a feeling that my co-enforcer disliked my Beast as much as he did me. I grinned at him, showing too many all-too-human teeth, and said, "Thanks." He tossed it over his shoulder, and then took my weapons bag and Eli's two bags, too. Dude had been drinking vamp blood, and a lot of it, to be so strong. There was a time when Leo's other enforcer would have hidden his extra-strong vamp blood-enhanced physique. Not now. And then I remembered the list of fights and wondered how many Derek was lined up for. He led the way up the steps and out of the wind and prop noise, his feet light, unhindered by the extra weight. Yeah, he had been drinking lots of vamp blood. As much as his humanish system could process. Not that I blamed him. He wouldn't heal as fast as I would. If he took a lethal wound, he'd be much more likely to die. Like Eli. Even with Skinwalker healing, which was faster than normal even if I didn't shift, I was still sore from my beating. Having someone else carry my gear was helpful, though I'd never tell Derek that. We followed Derek, and I felt Beast prowl through my brain and out through my nerves, edgy, uneasy, spitting in frustration. Want to kill vampires. Want to eat vampires. Want to drink vampire blood. As I took the stairway to the front porch entry, the construction types behind me offloaded supplies, while people who were headed back to shore for the rest of the night climbed aboard. The roar changed and the helo took off again. I could feel the wood stairs strain beneath the weight of the men and women following me. Between the open risers, I spotted summer ocean gear lashed to the pylons beneath the house, lit by security lights. Behind chain-link fencing, attached to the pylons, were brand-new lounges, kayaks, paddles, paddle boards, a mid-sized John boat with a new-looking motor. All the stuff needed for a long weekend in the sun. In the center beneath the house was an open space where the workers had piled supplies, slung hammocks, and set up a table for meals. To the side of the summer stuff were boxes and crates piled on wood pallets. Near the unopened boxes was a pile of flattened cardboard and shaped foam packing material, plastic straps, and the glint of staples. At the back was wallboard, enough 2x4s and 2x6s to build another mansion, strips of unpainted molding, stacks of 5-gallon buckets, and various other construction materials,
We climbed the steps. The porch on the first floor was screened and appeared to wrap around the entire house. It had its own roof system. Plank floors and hammocks, tables, and lounge chairs were scattered around. Inside, the smells of salt water, sawdust, glue, beer, cigarette smoke, and paint were heavy on the air, though the windows were all open and the salty gulf wind blew through. I stepped to the side of the entrance and propped Alex against the wall. Eli looked around and his nose crinkled just a bit. The workers crowded in behind us. I raised my hands to my mouth and shouted, "People, heads up. Gather in the entry." I wished I had a megaphone. The acoustics were horrible. The bodybuilder woman stepped in front of me and cupped her hands around her mouth. In the better light, I could see she wore no makeup, but heavy sunscreen had caked in the folds of her ears. She was sweaty and tanned and had highlighted brown hair. "Yo, Yellow Rock is here. Get your asses to first floor." Her words echoed off the walls and ceiling, and my eyebrows went up high. She had lungs and a gift for projection. She stuck out a hand. "I'm Bambi. They call me Mike, for microphone, and because I hate the dead deer pole dancer image of Bambi. I can see why. The guys all been wanting to meet you. Some of them think you need a good beer. Others think they have a chance to get you in the sack." She ran a loose strand of hair behind her ear, and her brown eyes took me in from toes to bun. "I told them you date the former primo. Showed them a pic of him on my cell, in a tux. Dude is hot." "Oh," I said, not quite sure how to handle her spiel. "They backed off, but if you happen to have the bad taste to dump the man, swing him my way. I just broke up with my boyfriend." Without waiting for my answer, she moved to the side and squatted down.
"Babe,"
Eli said, "close your mouth. My boyfriend just got hit on."
"She's forthright,"
he said, with that micro smile that meant he was teasing me.
"That makes her interesting."
"Then you date her." Eli looked at Bambi, Mike, speculation in his eyes. He hadn't been with anyone since he and Syl had stopped calling. He'd be happier if he and a willing female partnered up for a night, or more. "Hmm," he said. I glanced back at Bambi, and then at Eli, and gave her a thumbs up, concealed at my side. Bambi checked Eli out, and I could practically feel the sexual tension in the air when their eyes met. I had a feeling my second would be spending the night with a girl named Mike. On the heels of that thought, the front room and entry filled with workers from the upper stories and the rest from outside. Voices and work boots against wood floors filled the room, along with the stink of testosterone and Italian food. No one seemed inclined to be quiet. So I stepped out into the middle of the room and stood, feet braced shoulder-width apart and hands at my sides. Eli and Alex stepped behind and beside me, one to either side. It was like having a support team. Not that I needed a team, but it would speed things along faster than having to prove to the men that I was worth listening to. If I had to break bones to get their attention, that might slow up the work on the house. Bambi Mike shouted, "Shut up!" And then she added some colorful language about how their mothers were all sluts and whores and their daddies dated werewolves. There was general laughter, but they all quieted and turned to me. I leaned down an inch or two and whispered in Alex's ear. "Full background on her. Soon as Beaudette and I get the hardware in place to get online, we don't even know if this cobbled-together system will work or not yet." I wondered if Bambi wanted a job with the MOC, or even with Clan Yellow Rock, which was a very weird thought. "I'm Jane Yellow Rock." I looked from man to man to woman. "We have a little over 36 hours to get this place ready for vamps and their humans. Vamps start arriving just after dusk, night after next. That means all construction, plumbing, and electrical finished. Electronics and security installed. Painting, touch-ups, and punch list completed all in 30 hours. That'll give the next crew 6 hours to clean and stage it."
Lady, you got no idea what goes into a job like this.
The speaker stepped forward, and it was the young, good-looking man from the Landon site. He had charisma and charm to balance his looks, and from the heads nodding around us, it was clear he was some kind of leader, official or otherwise.
You're not familiar with the ins and outs of a construction site.
He gestured with a hand as if to show me that the house was a construction site.
Most women have no idea.
He gave me his best, most charming smile, one with condescension in it. He wanted me to know my place. I felt Eli tense at my side, a meager increase in the tightness of his muscles. I studied the pretty boy, with his model perfect teeth, his careful scruff, his clean, matching layers and plaid overshirt, and his citrusy cologne. Citrusy. An electric shock shot through me. Pretty boy went on.
It's physically and mentally demanding, making impossible deadlines sound great on TV shows, but reality is a different matter.
Condescension deep enough to drown in. Sounds like you know what you're talking about, I said. You a foreman?
Yeah, Marco.
He pointed to his chest.
Madison Construction. We're in charge of the project.
Who's your number two person? Pretty boy pointed to a short, lean, graying, clean-shaven man with deep sun-baked wrinkles. Veins crawled over his lower arms beneath the cuffs of his rolled-up sleeves. This guy's clothes were dusty, wrinkled, and sweat-stained, though I had a feeling they had been clean when he started his workday. I walked close to Pretty Boy and breathed in his scent. Lemons. Alex, I said softly, what is Marco's last name?
Agrios.
A name I had heard recently somewhere. It came to me. Agrios had run with the Zips, the local gang who had helped in the attack at the jewelry shop. A name that Andromeda was going to ask around about, ask her brother who ran with the Razors. And maybe she had. And maybe she had died because of that. The shock in my system intensified, fueled by anger. He smells like lemons, I said.
His background check was stellar, Alex said. Except,
the word held a tone of disgust and self-loathing.
Except that Agrios means citrus. Titus was thumbing his nose at us. My Spanish is pretty sucky, so I didn't catch it.
De Citron had an inside man, and we hadn't caught him. I wanted to hit something. I was pretty sure my beast had risen inside me and that my eyes were glowing. A lot of thoughts raced through Marco's eyes. His body tensed and his scent vacillated. Uncertainty, worry, and a flash of joy. We hadn't said the words de Citron. We hadn't said anything about the Emperor. His scent stabilized. The smell of a man who was about to bluff. Derek, I said.
Yes, Enforcer,
Derek drawled. I looked his way to see that he was enjoying all this. I got the feeling that he'd had a run-in with Pretty Boy already. Help our pessimistic friend pack, and see he makes it back to shore. He's fired. The smell of dismay and hostility filled the air. The workers might not like Marco, but they liked a woman coming in and taking over even less. Alex and Eli stepped out, shoulders back, an unspoken threat.
For what cause? Marco asked, his hands fisting.
He stepped into my face.
You don't have the authority to fire me, lady.
I didn't bother to respond to his claim. I couldn't put a human in restraints just because he smelled like lemons. But I could get him off the island, and to a vamp who could drink the answers out of him. Derek, he needs to be bled and red. The words were oblique, telling Derek that Marco might be an enemy blood servant, and more dangerous than a human. Understanding filled Derek's face.
My pleasure, Enforcer, he said.
Derek and two of his men descended on Pretty Boy, who had turned a lovely and satisfying shade of red. There followed a scuffle and some cussing, and the vision of Derek and his security pals half-carrying the man out the front door. The smell of antagonism from the construction workers had deepened. They looked twitchy, apprehensive at the loss of the pack leader and the rearrangement of their previous social order. I'd picked the infiltrator out of the lineup and made my own impression all at once. And not a good one. Go me. Finishing the house still hung in the balance. I could turn the crews to me, or I could ruin everything. I usually ruined things. That man stank of lemons. Anyone notice that?
So what?
A man asked. He was beer-bellied and wearing a sweat-stained t-shirt. I said, let me guess. He was new to the firm. Been with you for less than 2 months. He just walked in one day and took over, with the acceptance of the powers that be, and yet he knew next to nothing about construction. Am I right? The guy rubbed his scruffy chin and hunched his shoulders, thinking.
Okay, so?
The enemies of the Master of the City stink of lemons. Marco was a blood servant. I don't know how he wormed his way into Matterson Construction, but I'm guessing it was by coercion. The guy blinked as if he had missed something and then cursed softly. Anyone else want to go home? I asked. No one responded. Fine. You. I pointed to the number two man. Ever been a foreman on a construction site?
Most of my life,
he said, not watching the inelegant removal of Pretty Boy. Name?
Rennie Couser.
Rennie, you're now the official Matterson foreman for this project. I'll personally handle any fallout from the owner. Rennie nodded once, a man of few words. I liked that. I'll continue what I came to say. I scanned the men and women. They turned from the door and looked at Rennie, then at me. There were some unhappy expressions still, but there was also comprehension and a few of the people looked delighted. Riding on top of the uneasy, unhappy stench, there was something else. Respect, maybe.
Beast Jane, we are Alpha.
So far, I thought back. Let's see if money will make that more than a passing fancy. I know I'm the newcomer here, and what I know about construction can be written on the head of a pen in longhand. But I know hard work. You're already on overtime, I said to the crews. As of now, you're on bonus time. You get this house finished in 30 hours, according to the plan Rennie lays out, and you will each make 10% of your yearly base salary, in cash, to be paid by the MOC. The unhappy stench on the air cleared up fast. Eyes tightened, smiles started, and I could see them each calculating how much money they stood to make. You get to police each other, I continued. If word comes to Derek Lean that someone's slacking and letting other people do their work, with the plan to cash in on the bonus anyway, that person will be shipped back to shore. I expect you to work hard, work steady, work together, and take breaks and sleep time as needed. I don't intend anyone to crash and burn. I want the foreman of each crew to meet with Rennie, Eli Younger, and Derek when he gets back to give them an idea of what needs to be done and in what order. This project, the approval of the MOC, as well as cash bonuses, are all on your shoulders. I turned to the side. Mike, I'd like a tour of the house. Alex, come with. See what you need to get this place rigged for security and satellite cells or remote internet or cameras or whatever it is needs doing. The house was in better shape than we feared and worse shape than we hoped. The pylons driven into the sand continued up through the house, which should have made the space feel cut up and small. But the poles had been wrapped in fancy woodwork and allowed an open floor plan. The first story was all party space, with a restaurant-quality white kitchen and brushed steel appliances that had clearly been updated in the last couple of years. Alex ran a hand along the white and gray countertops and said, Carrera, with reverence, so that had to mean they were top of the line. Interesting. Leo may not have been here, but his people had kept up the investment. There was a dining table that would seat 20 in a pinch, 3 seating areas, and a library full of moldering books. Except for the kitchen and the big table, all the furniture was old and decrepit.
but the staging crew was supposed to bring replacements. The ceilings were a little overstandard height and looked like old pressed tin. The ancient Hunter Fan Company fans still worked, and the floors might have been cypress under the layer of construction dirt. The walls were cream or eggshell throughout the lower floor, and the wood moldings were stark white. "Windows?" I asked Mike, to see how well she communicated. Or how well she read my mind, either way. "All new 3 years ago. Shutters all new. They look antique, but they're electronic hurricane shutters, and slide into recesses in the walls. Benefit of keeping out hurricane winds is that they're also light-proof, so vamps are safe by day," she said casually. When I didn't reply, she added, "Unless someone hits a wrong switch and the shutters open. But there's a 20-second delay, and an alarm built into the system, so theoretically any light-sensitive person could get to shelter." I made a small sound of doubtful agreement, and she went on. "Sleeping area is on the second story, and there are decorative fire escapes built into the outer walls." Without waiting for us, Mike headed up the wide stairway, located beside the kitchen, in front of the entry. To Alex, I said, "Cameras and electronics look possible. Not a piece of cake, but we can get something." He needed to get more than something. He needed to get a system set up that would allow for the Sangre Duello to be uploaded to pay-per-view on the internet. I made another small sound as we reached the second floor. It was constructed with a central walled-up, contained area, encircled by a wide hallway and long, narrow bedrooms around the outside. It was set up like insertable boxes, a small central space, a wider open ring, and more box. I figured the central area was for vamp sleeping, and the outside rooms were for humans. As I had been informed, there were 4 bedrooms for humans, 2 on the front of the house facing the ocean, and 1 on each side. Along the back was an even more narrow room, one that appeared to have been a very recently enclosed porch, not much more than 8 feet wide along the back wall. In the hallway there was an ice chest, several sawhorse tables, 6 mesh folding chairs, a 50-gallon garbage can full of trash and flies, and cola bottles everywhere. The walls on this level hadn't been freshly painted, and the color scheme was less than pleasant, with clashing tropical colors and ugly murals. Alex said, "This might have been painted by grade school kids." And he was right. This floor also stank of mold, even with the windows open to the night air. Walls and wallboard were missing between some rooms, temporary studs visible where 1 bath had been enlarged and added on to. I didn't ask where the water came from or where the plumbing drained to. I didn't really want to know. But the baths were mostly raw pipes. 2 men came up beside me and one said, "I'm Jake, master cabinet maker. Time constraints mean nothing is custom, but ready-made cabinets were delivered today. I'll get them in and leveled as fast as I can. The wood floor system is uneven, and there's not a single wall or floor or ceiling that's plumb in this place. But I'll get them done." Jake pointed to the African-American man beside him. The name stenciled on his shirt was Travis. "Travis has the plumbing complete, except for tying to faucets and drains. Fixtures are under the first floor on the sand." Travis nodded at me, silent. I remembered the boxes and stacked crates downstairs. "Lot of things a large group of vamps and humans can do without, Travis. Plumbing isn't one." Mike said, "Rennie suggested we put in fighting mats on the sand under the first floor. We could add a shower outside since drains wouldn't be needed." They knew the Sangre Duello was going to involve fighting and blood and were thinking ahead. Alex grunted. Eli frowned. Travis added, "They fight down there. The sand makes cleanup easier between bouts. The shower would keep some of the bloody mess out of the house. Could be used to wash off blood, sweat, and gore outside rather than track it inside up the stairs." The idea was brilliant. "And?" I asked.
"And Marco said no," Jake said.
"You want the fighting area and the shower under the house?"
Travis asked me. "I think it's nifty.
Is it possible to get an outdoor shower installed and still hit our timeline?
Can do,
Travis said and trotted off, calling for Rennie. As he left, five men and the stocky woman I had seen earlier strode up the stairs. They carried hammers, hefty tape measures, skill saws, and an air of determination. In seconds, they were banging permanent studs in place beside the temporary ones, hanging wall board, and discussing ways to finish the walls without the finishing compound drying, which took 3 days in dry air. I knew finishing compound. It was the stuff that went under, above, and around wallboard tape to keep the seams from cracking. I'd seen Eli use it on the various house repairs. I'd been rough on the formerly freebie house. I looked at Mike and dipped my chin in approval at the crew. Money talks, she said. I hope so. Especially since I hadn't cleared the expense with Leo's accountant, Raisin. My promise would be a smack to the Mithrin coffers. Let's see the vamp sleeping quarters. The central area was separated into four tiny square rooms, all opening into a foyer of sorts. There were two official doors and an escape hatch out through a hidey hole that led to a long drop to the sand, like a dumbwaiter chute. No windows, extra thick walls. I smelled old blood when Mike lifted the escape hatch. Some vamp had dropped through it in the distant past, badly wounded. Two electricians carrying toolboxes and ladders came in behind us and started work. The center rooms were already in place and the walls soundproofed when the full crew got here, Mike said. Finished some time ago and ready for color. Soon as the last of the new bathroom walls are in place, we'll blow the paint on. We have enough equipment to blow the entire house in about 3 hours. And if we run out of solar power, we have generators. Paint will dry well enough in 8 hours for the electricians to put up the lighting fixtures, and your staging team can work around the wetter spots. You can get the painters to stick around to touch up as needed. Mike was good, answering my questions before I asked. She led us back into the hallway, squatted, and indicated the unpainted wallboard. Finishing compound won't cure in time. It'll look okay for a day or two, but in the wet air, it'll mold if we don't come back and strip the tape, recompound the walls, and repaint. But this is the best we can do. She looked up at me, speculation in her eyes. I couldn't place her expression. Beast raised her head, sniffed, and sat up, vaguely interested, but not telling me why. When I didn't say anything, she asked, "You don't talk much, do you?" "Not really." I pointed at the stairs up. "Let's see the third floor." The third floor was one huge space, empty of workers, with gigantic wood pillars that held up the roof system and passed straight through the house, deep into the sand below. The room was vaulted with weathered gray-toned tongue-and-groove boards and big, slow-turning copper fans, green with verdigris. There were hidden lights in the unpainted rafters and beams that cast quirky shadows. The walls were pale, maybe once painted white. The floor was cedar planks inlaid with darker wood in three places, each in the shape of La Destreza fighting rings. Not modern fighting rings, but octagonal fighting rings, like I had seen in books. All the windows were open to the night air, and there were a lot of windows. For the first time, I considered the kind of views that every window and the wraparound porch would have by day. Spectacular. I wondered how the house had survived hurricanes and floods. It was amazing. "I love this room," Mike said, turning in a circle, as if seeing all the views. She was balanced, rooted, her stance bringing Beast to the surface, turning my attention to the woman. Something about her movements. A dancer, ice skater. "I could live here forever," she said.
"I can see why,"
Alex said, looking at me.
"Dibs?"
I chuckled and shook my head. "No, you can't claim this room." "I could imagine painting in this room," Mike said, her voice almost dreamy. "Canvases there and there," she pointed, "to take advantage of the light. It's amazing by day. soft and ethereal. Despite the claw hammer and oversized tape measure on her belt, Bambi was an artist at heart, and better educated than her rant at the construction workers had indicated. Sadly, the room she was admiring wasn't for artists or canvases. It was for fighting. Could be used for an artist's atelier, she said. Could be a sleeping loft. There are heavy-duty steel screws in rings in all the supports for backdrop, cloths, or to hang hammocks. The breeze shifted. I caught the scent of lemons coming through the windows. 3 stories up. Chapter 15. Jane was sick from walking through time. Beast moved, fast, 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 grabbed Alex left-handed and spun, tossed him out of harm's way. He was still in the air when an object flew through the window. Ah-wee leaped. Beast and Jane, in perfect concert, caught it, let it swing me around, and in the same motion threw it out a different window. Heard odd popping sounds, identified the device only after it left my our hand. Hand grenade. Just outside the window it exploded. Debris peppered inside the room. My hand went numb. Spelled, I thought. Alex landed, rolled down the stairs, shouting, more popping, gunfire. Bambi Mike dropped to the floor for cover. Ah-wee rushed the window the grenade came through, soared out the opening into the night, and saw Marco dropping toward the roof of the porch below. Beast is fast, she took over, twisted in the air away from the light in the window. Marco landed on the tin roof, turned, fast as a blood servant, a blur in the darkness. He raised a weapon, fired at the window we'd just left. Beast landed beside him, fisted hand, hit Marco on the jaw, uppercut, all weight and might behind single blow. Marco snapped back, fell from roof, to land on sand below. Beast is best hunter. Ah-wee whipped back, caught edge of porch roofing. Metal and wood, extended claws, caught weight, swung inside to porch, landing on railing. Man standing there squeaked. Everyone was down on floor, taking cover. Thanks, I thought to Beast, as she gave me back my body. I jumped the final distance to the sand and knelt beside the limp form of Marco. He was breathing. I grabbed his arm and rolled him over, knee at his back. I tried to trap his arms, but my hand didn't work. I heard the individual, particular percussion of Eli's feet on the steps. Flat-out run, 3 stairs at a time, smelled Eli. A 9 mil and a handful of zip strips entered my field of vision. Can't, I breathed, holding up my hand and arm. Marco came back to consciousness and shook himself like a dog, started fighting again. Or trying to. Eli took over and strapped Marco's wrists together. Not as easy to do as it sounded with a screaming, punching, crazy blood servant, one with broken legs from his fall beneath him. One-handed, I banged his head on the ground. Maybe harder than was necessary, to subdue him. Eli strapped his ankles together above his boots with heavy-duty zip strips. When he was restrained, I removed Marco's weapons, everything, down to the silver stakes strapped to his calf. I sat on Marco, breathing hard, lip dripping. Blood all over my casual clothes, dang it. How did he get free? How did he get up to the 3rd floor? My fault, Derek said, stumbling out of the darkness, the stink of his blood on the air. I thought we had him contained at the LZ. Son of a bitch got free. Pulled a move I haven't seen since the military, and faster than shit. Hit me over the head. My guys are down too, alive but out. He sat down hard on the sand, as if he was dizzy. Blood dripped from his nose and the back of his head, and curdled into his collar. With my good hand, I pulled him forward and inspected the wound. Ow, he said, jerking away, only to grab his head again, the stink of his nausea acrid on the air. Concussion, I said. A human would have needed stitches in a dark room and concussion protocol. Derek had been drinking powerful vamp blood. He'd likely be fine.